From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. After all the chaos that had occurred in our nation's capital over the past week, I thought it would be comforting and reassuring to have Naps' Executive Vice President, Ivan Butts, return as our guest on this week's edition of Naps Chat. Welcome back, Ivan.
Thanks, Bob.
Before we discuss some topics of importance to our postal community, I wanted to take a few moments to defend our dedicated postal employees from a spiteful lie uttered by Donald Trump at the so-called Stop the Steal rally on January 6th. At that rally, which incited the assault on the United States Capitol, Trump stated as factual a universally discredited allegation that Wisconsin postal employees illegally backdated 100,000 ballots. The fiction was first uttered by a short-term temporary employee of a postal contractor whose claim was discredited about 2 months ago. The falsehood was based on a supposedly overheard conversation that could not have taken place because under Wisconsin law, ballot acceptance is based on whether or not a ballot was in the possession of election authorities on 8 o'clock p.m. on election evening, not the date on which the ballots were postmarked. So Trump's assertion at his rally is demonstrably false and libels dedicated postal employees who performed heroically during the election season. Ivan, I just thought that needed to be said.
Well, thanks, Bob. That was very well put. You're absolutely right. The Postal Service performed admirably in this election cycle. We delivered over 65.2 million ballots across the country. And it's just a shame that, you know, one, we've been politicized in this process for doing just what we do to the best of our ability every day, and that's try to serve America.
One of the things that we're going to be focusing on this year, Ivan, and we've spoken about this in detail, is to also look at the state capitals and state legislatures as they come and they take a look at voting by absentee ballot through the postal system, because we are concerned that the misinformation and lies about the Postal Service could influence what we think would be very, very bad decisions by legislatures to sort of curtail absentee balloting.
Yeah, I think, you know, really what I just want to do, I just want to build on what we proved in this election cycle. So we reached out to the state leadership on vote by mail and mail-in ballot issues, and again, trying to tell them, encouraging them to contact and work with the Postal Service on NSA's agreements for their vote by mail process. I think we're going to do some follow-up on that with the state level, just to kind of, you know, tell them, you know, let them, one, see and hear about the data and the success that the Postal Service had with vote by mail and mail-in ballots in this cycle, and then encourage them to move to this process. Again, it's, you know, Postal Service is safe, secure. You can't hack a letter. So, you know, if you want turnout, if you want accuracy, if you want security, then vote by mail is what you want.
I just want to make a comment right now. All this information about or the promotion of the attack on the Capitol was not done in printed correspondence that was mailed. It was all done on electronic or digital communications. So the importance and the credibility of hard copy printed information transit by the Postal Service in any way, shape, or form has tremendous, tremendous credibility in contrast to what we've been seeing online.
Yeah, I think this whole social media issue is really kind of coming to a boil right now with, you know, what people believe and then what they do with that belief, what they see. And there's some scary things, and it should give us all some pause as to what we take in and then what we do with that information.
Now, Ivan, let's talk a little bit about postal performance, particularly with regard to timeliness of first-class mail, which is so important, and that is a core product of the United States Postal Service.
All right, Bob, I just finished talking about how great we did with elections.
Well, I'm talking about things that are outside of postal employees' control, and you know where I'm going right now. As our listeners know, federal courts ordered the Postal Service to submit performance data as a direct result of a series of lawsuits brought against Postal Service management in response to headquarters operational directives this past summer. Operational directives, not postal employees' work. Could you talk about your review of that data? Because I know you have been developing charts and really analyzing that data in detail.
Yeah, Bob, it really brings a concern when we look at the data and start doing analytics around it. You know, again, during this election cycle where we delivered, we had a focus effort across the board on ballots and getting that done, and we performed over 90%. But when looking at this information coming out based on the lawsuit from the Southern District of New York, what we see is that our market-dominant products are continually to suffer and deteriorate. And it's a combination of things. I think we're in kind of that perfect storm, like the perfect storm in 08 with the finances and everything, a downturn of volume. I think we might be heading into that perfect storm also in this time. One, the machine reductions. We cannot, you know, I guess you can't, you know, talk about service without talking about the machines that were reduced back in June when the new Postmaster General or the Postmaster General came on board or before and then shortly after that. So that's one factor. And then obviously COVID-19 is playing a factor. We have employee availability issues that we have to realize. So you have those two components coming in, and then you just have the fall. We had the peak season, so then we're struggling with that with peak season also. So you have a combination of things that really is impacting operations across the board. But you know, and on that data that we're getting out of the Southern District of New York, I mean, you just see mail service that's really getting to levels that we have never seen, even probably prior to automation. You know, we never seen scores like this. So it gives us some pause to, you know, moving into a new administration and a new session on what postal reform is, but what is postal restoration. And I think that's a conversation that we're going to have on our legislative grassroots efforts also.
I should mention that when we speak about the Southern District, that is the Federal District Court for the Southern District of New York, and that lawsuit, party to that lawsuit, was a freshman member of Congress. At that time, he was a candidate, and the individual who was the lead litigant in that lawsuit is now a freshman member of Congress from New York, from, I believe, Rockland County, which is north of New York City. And I believe he is one of a part of the leadership right now in the Congress as a representative of the freshman class. So that's just an interesting tidbit about this lawsuit. I want to also talk just about the performance data, because I am particularly interested in the on-time numbers in two postal districts that were consequential in the 2020 election and the recent January 4th Georgia runoff elections. Those are the Detroit District and the Atlanta District. In early June, the first-class on-time performance in Detroit was 86%, and for Atlanta was 91%, respectively. In Detroit, as I understand it, 11 delivery barcode sorters were removed during the summer, and 2 AFCs were removed. In Atlanta, 4 DBCSs were removed, and 2 AFCSs were removed. Fast forward, the most recent data filed in federal court, and that would have been January 8th, that would reflect the end of December. it reflects an operational cratering in Detroit of on time of 44% on time in Detroit and 51% on time in Atlanta. That's a drop of 42% and 40%, Ivan. What? Yeah. That's shocking.
Yeah, it is, Bob. I was very shocked when I seen this report that came out and started looking at that data. Those reductions in service that drastic. Again, you know, we could point to the kind of triple impact that we have going on, but certainly, you know, the machine losing this machine capability, which we said in the beginning when we found out about these machine reductions and talking to legislators, we talked about taking that type of firepower out of our infrastructure is going to impact service. Now that's just been magnified with COVID-19 and then the peak season. But nevertheless, taking that amount of processing firepower out of an infrastructure, it's going to decimate service. And this is just what we're seeing.
And this is not the result of employee problems. This is operational problems from the issue of automation. Because in June, we had the pandemic. The pandemic hit the Postal Service already. So the variable that changed, or the factor that changed, was the operational capability of the Postal Service with regard to the lack of machinery to actually process mail in a timely manner.
Yeah, but I will give some cover to leadership based on employee availability. Although I haven't seen actual data on employee availability, that I have to believe that now that we have moved further along into this COVID-19 pandemic, that we may be seeing more employee call-offs and employee availability issues. Again, I haven't seen data that really supports it, but like I said, I'll give some cover on that issue. But still, what we said in the initial still really rings true now, and that is if you take that amount of firepower out of operations, then you're going to delay mail, and you're not going to be as efficient in serving America.
So we have less machinery and less employees with the squeezing of overtime and increased mail volume as the result, because this is post-election mail. So we're talking about Christmas mailing season, all that factoring into just not having the capability of delivering appropriately. That's not a good place to be for America's premier delivering network.
No, it's not a place we want to be, and it's not certainly not a place we've been in quite a number of years. That's why I believe one of the things we have to look at is restoration, some type of operational service restoration, not just reform for the Postal Service. I think we moved into a new level of addressing postal issues.
So that leads me into my next question is, how should NAPS react to this data? And how should how should the Postal Service react to this data?
I mean, yeah, I think it's more importantly is how should the Postal Service react to the data? And again, you know, we're a service to America. We're America's Postal Service. Our mission is to deliver America's mail. And if you look at those scores, we're not doing that. So I would say that the look is from leadership of the Postal Service. What are you doing, or what are you going to propose to do to fix this service that's now really not serving America the way it should or the way it has in the past? I mean, I hear the frustration from our members out in the field just struggling day in and day out trying to deliver America's mail, and they continually feel like they're handcuffed and hamstringed by the very leadership that's supposed to be helping us deliver America's mail.
Now, Congress is going to be very interested in this, because our conversations that you and I have had with congressional leadership has been they want to have some oversight over what has happened over the past 6 months in the Postal Service. We'll talk a little bit about that in a second, but I first want to talk to you about the presidential transition and what impact you think it will have on postal decision making. As you know, there are three current vacancies on the Postal Board of Governors. The president nominates members to the Board of Governors, and the Senate must confirm them. Most importantly, the Board of Governors is the Postmaster General's boss. What advice would you give, if you were opposite facing in a meeting in the Oval Office with President-elect Biden, what advice would you give him on selecting nominees to fill the three vacancies on the Board of Governors?
Well, of course, I think first and foremost, Bob, they need to be have a mindset or a business mindset of serving. What does it mean to serve America in this Postal Service? How do we grow this business? How do we move this business forward? I think they need to be really pro-postal and not with a mindset of how cut. One thing, you know, that really strikes me, former Postmaster Donahoe, one of the things he said as he was about to retire after he, you know, did a lot of things that you would consider cuts, was he said, well, you know, the Postal Service, we got to do something different. We can't cut our way to sustainability. But that's exactly what the Postal Service continues to do, try to cut its way to sustainability. And that's not working, and that's not serving America. So I would ask the president to kind of look at leadership on that Board of Governors that's going to help this agency make better decisions than what they're making now with the cuts that they're doing. Figuring out how we continue to serve America, even if that means that, you know, if some budgetary changes have to be made, that America's Postal Service remains sustainable, remains vibrant, and again, it even expands what it's doing. There's tremendous opportunity out there, but, you know, I think the Postal Service leadership needs to be willing to take advantage of it. And then we need support from our Board of Governors to move the Postal Service leadership in that direction.
So you're looking for a Board of Governors that will rebuild the Postal Service and equip it to deal with the challenges that it's facing without cutting itself into oblivion.
Yeah, I think that's what I would like to see. Also, I think you know, the Board of Governors need to know something about the post office, need to, you know, maybe be a former postal employee or postal leader. They need to understand the operation. I mean, you know, I think part of our problem is that we have people even working at USPS headquarters that never worked in the post office, never touched a piece of mail other than opening their own personal mail or work mail. So, you know, we have leaders that don't have a clear understanding of what the mission is, or only have an understanding of a mission from reading a report or reading a document, you know. So I think, you know, having not that kind of boots on ground knowledge could be helpful too.
Interesting. There is precedent for that because there wasn't a member of the Postal Regulatory Commission in recent memory, a former postmaster named Don Tisdale, who had an operational knowledge of the Postal Service and was able to share that knowledge with other members of the Postal Regulatory Commission while he was in service. So it would make sense that a former postal employee possibly serve on the Board of Governors. It's not unprecedented.
Yeah, and I think that kind of knowledge is beneficial to all, not just in making decisions, but beneficial to the other board members who really only know, again, what you read on a report or what you kind of read in a newspaper. So their knowledge is very limited on actually how the inner workings of operation, boots on ground operation works. That's one of the things I love about, you know, that we have a Brenda Lawrence in Congress, someone who's a former postal manager. So she knows the ins and outs. She knows the post office. So, you know, it makes her support that much more beneficial to us.
We were just talking about the president can appoint, you know, nominate members of the Board of Governors, but he doesn't necessarily take part in any operational decisions of the Postal Service. However, the president could direct budgetary arms of the government or certain arms, agencies within the government, of accommodating certain budgetary issues that have thus far been unfair to the Postal Service, for example, the calculation of the retirement liability. So would you advise the president in areas of treating the Postal Service more fairly as far as determining liability?
Yeah, absolutely I would, Bob, because I think, you know, those determinations, as you just said, are unfair. And over the years, they really painted a bleak picture of the Postal Service. So, again, those formulas and factors need to be looked at, and they need to be more modernized to a real-world model for the Postal Service. And the president has that power to do that by authorizing those agencies to make those changes. So, yes, that would be help to give us a more realistic picture of where the Postal Service is.
Now let's turn our attention to Congress, and Senator Gary Peters of Michigan will be the new chairman of the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs. He is quite different than his predecessor, Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. What advice would you give Senator Peters as he assumes the chairmanship of that committee?
I guess I would just, you know, ask Senator Peters, you know, to be open-minded towards, you know, the situation where we are. In our conversations with him, he's been very supportive of postal issues and postal concerns. I know he has some real issues about the direction the Postal Service is going in with these machine reductions. So I would just ask for him to just kind of continue to give us and show us that support. And we'll be, you know, looking forward to working with him to our fullest possibility, really, to try to, you know, make sure that we keep America's post office sustainable. I think one of the things looking at, and again, we talked about Michigan and some of the issues up in Detroit. I know that's very disturbing to him, but there are ways that we can fix that. And it's good that we have him in leadership because, under the last chairman of our committee, we really saw a very little next to nothing that he was even willing to do. His infamous thing was let the post office go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. We're in a better place just because we don't have that anymore.
On the other side of the Capitol, Representative Carol Maloney will retain the gavel of the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, and Jerry Connolly will retain the chairmanship of the subcommittee that has jurisdiction over the Postal Service. They have both been very critical of postal headquarters operational changes made this past summer. What advice would you provide them?
Well, you know what? In our conversations with Representative Chairwoman Maloney and Chairman Connolly, you know, we talked about that. We talked about the service. We talked about, you know, the decline of service with the machine reductions and things that we would like to see or the things that need to be addressed. And they have a wealth of understanding from working not just with NASA, but working with the other management association and the unions on our issues for numbers of years trying to get things moved across the finish line. I'm just excited that we're in a position now where maybe we can get some of these things over the finish line. Postal reform, MSPB rights for EAS, fair pay for managers, and through the changes in Title 39, just, you know, I'm just kind of excited that they've been with us all this time moving legislation that really didn't go anywhere because it wasn't moving through the Senate. But now we have an opportunity now that maybe we can move some of those issues through the Senate and get them signed into law and move our not just the agency into a better place, but also, you know, benefit EAS and postal employees for the future.
During the first week in Congress, Representative Steve Lynch introduced House Resolution 47. That's from last year. As people might recall, he introduced a resolution to ensure that the Postal Service remains a federal agency and provides a public service and not be privatized. So we just wanted to let our folks know that that is one of the postal bills that has already been introduced this Congress. And we're going to be looking forward to reintroduction of particularly legislation with regard to Merit System Protection Board appeal rights, as well as give a fairer consultative process, which were two bills which were introduced by Congressman Jerry Connolly, and also to address whistleblower protections for our members we'll be looking for this year. Last question, Ivan, and that brings us to our priorities, is I want to talk about our reimagined springtime legislative training seminar, which people are so accustomed to traveling to Washington and interacting in person face-to-face. Could you share what our plans are at this point about the reimagined LTS?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously due to COVID-19 and everything that's going up here in the district, we decided that we would cancel the in-person LTS in March that was scheduled for March 28th. But what we want to do, we definitely want to keep our foot on the gas on our grassroots legislation. We don't want to slow down at all. So we're going to put together all our materials that we normally put together and have available for you on the website for our LTS, our talking points, our slides, our economic impact statements, even the critique forms, all those things that you normally see at an LTS. And then what we want to do is once we get that developed and have that all on, we're going to have a series of Zoom meetings probably at the regional levels, where we'll bring in the state legislative chair, state president at a minimum, and then whatever other members are available to get on, are more than willing to get on, and then go over many training sessions for our membership, and then encourage you to set up these meetings, Zoom meetings, with your legislators, and then we'll continue to move our issues, our legislative concerns, our asks, move them forward and not take our foot off the gas just because we're dealing with this pandemic, to work within the pandemic in a new way.
And would you, because we're going to be having this LTS, this reimagined LTS in the spring, that provides an opportunity at our summer convention to reinforce those messages and to do the big fall push to underscore the importance of the issues that we brought to the attention of our members of Congress during the spring?
Yeah, absolutely. At some point in time, it's going to be, you know, a work in progress. But at some point in time, you know, hopefully we'll be able to start, you know, coming back up to D.C. and doing things up on the Hill. And then, you know, we'll have to look at that. One thing that I said that, you know, to you guys, a lot hinged on where we were as leadership, right, as the administrator, as the president, the Congress, and the Senate, where we were. If the perfect thing came about where we had a labor-friendly administration, Congress, and Senate, then, you know, we were in a window. We're in a window, a two-year window, to really move our grassroots desires, not just our efforts, but move the things we want to move to help shepherd them not across the finish line. So we're in that window now. So, you know, we're going to do everything we have to do to try to make that happen within this two-year window. So we got a lot of work cut out for us, but we'll get it together and get it moving.
Ivan, I want to thank you for joining us on Naps Chat this week.
Thanks, Bob.
To our listeners, if you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more important, tell your friends to download our podcast and listen in. Be well and be safe till next week.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you. I'm going